Welcome to the Green with Envy podcast. I am your host, Lerato Moja. You know that saying, you can't fill from an empty cup? Well, at the rate we are consuming our natural resources, Mother Nature's cup is on her last drops. This podcast aims to remind us of the simple things we can do to get her back on her feet. Join me as I chat to my friends, old and new, on the simple things we can do to protect and preserve our environment.
So, quick story about my guest today. I met him 2 months ago at a hip-hop festival. Yeah, I know. I didn't know this guy before October. And with him being here, you know, on the podcast, I guess that makes him my friend now, you know. So kids, don't listen to Drake when he says no new friends. You know, you must make new friends. You may learn a lot from them. And I know I'm about to learn and probably unlearn today. So Thabiso Molemohi, welcome to the Green with Envy podcast.
Thank you very much, Lerato. Yeah. I really appreciate the invite. It's awesome to be on this platform.
Yeah, and you're one of my, you've given me such great feedback on the podcast and what it stands for. And I guess, you know, it's part of the reason why I had to get you here, because I was like, okay, you know, this guy knows what he's talking about. Because I've been seeing your WhatsApp statuses and I was like, okay, I need to get this guy on the podcast and he must share his knowledge.
You know what? We must thank Meta for buying WhatsApp and just popularizing it, right? Otherwise, I wouldn't be on this podcast. So exactly. Thank you very much, Mark Zuckerberg and Meta.
Don't give them too much props now. Let's come back here, you know. But anyway, so we are here today. Like I said, yes, we've met at that hip hop concert and we exchanged numbers and, you know, started seeing your WhatsApp statuses and you're talking about the planets and you're talking about this and that. And I'm just like, yo, but this guy is passionate about what he's posting. But, you know, are people really learning or, you know, because I mean, a WhatsApp status is like, what, 30 seconds? And I felt like you just needed more time. I even said to you, you need to start your own TikTok channel or something, you know, to just expand on what you are sharing. So that's part of the reason why you're here today.
I remember. I remember that vividly. In fact, that also brought memories of a friend of mine. Mm-hmm. With the same name, by the way, Tabi. So, and you know, he was asking me, you know, why don't you start a podcast? You know, I'm like, yo, podcast. Yeah. You know, I mean, science is, it shouldn't be, but it's almost like a niche yeah. market in South Africa, right? It's not for everybody. And I thought, yo, yeah, no, that's gonna be a massive challenge. But and when you invited me, I'm like, there it is, you know, yeah. Green with Envy. You know what I mean? And I thought this is awesome. You know, this could just be the start of something. And hence, I really, really appreciated the invite to this wonderful podcast of yours, by the way.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And also, like you said, the science shouldn't be niche. I mean, we all live within a science sphere, you know. It's just that sometimes we ignore things that happen around us and we don't ask enough questions why things happen the way they do. And yeah, that's the whole point of this podcast. But obviously with me, I focus mostly on the green side of things, you know. And I just felt that with what you do, which we'll get to now, and what I do, we could find a meeting point somewhere, you know. So yeah, maybe let's get into it before we confuse people and what we are on about or what we are about to talk about. So let's start with, just introduce yourself and, explain maybe that will give obviously a prelude to why you're here. Just introduce yourself.
I am here.
Who is Thabiso and what you're all about.
Yeah, no, thank you. Thank you once again. You know, in a nutshell, I can put it to the listeners that I'm a science enthusiast, you know. Mm-hmm. I I, as somebody once said, one of the definitions that I like to also put on upon myself is just that I'm an amateur astronomer. Now, one of the papers that I read, somebody said an amateur astronomer is an interceding actor between the science elite and the public. So I'm the middleman, you know, I'm the middle guy. I'm the guy that takes those abstract scientific terms and phenomenon and just change that to make it palatable for the general public, you know, to make it very easily understandable. And I did this deliberately, Lerato. You know, science can be very confusing. It's got these very fancy terms that people don't understand, that are not readily accessible to people. And I thought to myself, you know, being somebody who's passionate about this subject, why do I not make it my mission to try and make it very easily accessible to people to understand so that they are not scared of science? You know, they want to embrace science and you know, take it in their stride to really learn more about it, and especially the natural and what goes on around them.
Yeah. And I guess by you saying that, you know, trying to make science easy and palatable, I think that's where we meet then, because I also felt that being in my space and the environment space, we tend to get carried away and using like big terms and make it unreachable to like my grandmother at home, you know. So my grandmother needs to understand when I say, oh, climate change, like what that means and what that means to her and how she can, you know, adapt or act differently. It mustn't be like this huge thing that people feel like, oh, okay, that doesn't concern me, when literally it does, you know. And I appreciate what you said about just making science easy, because it's very intimidating, especially like for kids in high school who just think, yo, science and maths, and already they get so stressed out that it's this difficult subject, but it really shouldn't be. So yeah.
No, I'm 100% with you. I think about this a whole lot of times, because if you think about it, I mean, we are all born scientists, right? Think about it. When you're a child, you are exploring your environment. You are touching things you shouldn't be touching. You are breaking things you shouldn't be breaking, all because you are exploring what you are seeing. You are trying to make sense of what is around you.
Inquisitive,
absolutely, which is what science is all about, right? We explore, we get into territories that we know nothing about, but in the quest of knowledge, we go nonetheless, right? We go nonetheless. And something also I was just reflecting on, that, you know, sometimes as a science communicator, and just generally as a communicator, it's not always the best thing to hit people with facts, right? That are abstract, that they don't understand. The message loses meaning if it's not effective. I can sit here and tell you all the amazing things in the universe, but if you do not understand the basics of my message, it just loses the whole meaning of it. So that's another thing that we try and do, right? To be able to reach people, to make our message very effective, because otherwise, what am I doing here, right?
What's the point?
I come up with... Exactly. I come with this, all these fancy terms, black holes, galaxies. But when people don't understand what those are, they're just like, that's that guy who's always posting and talking about science. But they don't really
get the grasp
of what I'm saying. Yeah.
Okay. So we're here today then to just bring it back down, because we had to have a pre-meeting before we did this episode, because I was like, okay. This topic is so vast. Where do we, like, you gave me 505. Let's go to 101. So, okay. So now let's talk about how and what led you to taking up astronomy as a hobby or passion. What triggered that? What were you thinking one day? And then, you know, something sparked and you're like, okay, I need to go to this route.
Look, for as long as I can remember, you know, I've had this love affair with the universe, astronomy, cosmology for over 25 years. And
okay,
I think
Mr. Universe.
What sparked all of this? I remember when I was very, very young, right? I would just go out at night and look at the night sky and think to myself, I mean, has it always been like this? You know, in the beginning, how was it? Was it dark? Was it light? If it was light, why was it light? If it was dark, why was it dark? You know, and it built from there onwards. And I must say that I grew up in a family that allowed me to explore. Right. I think that was the most fundamental thing for me. The inquisitiveness that I have today stems from that, right? Because I had these questions, these uncomfortable questions, you know, these almost near impossible questions that I wanted to know. And what is the sun? What is the moon? What do they mean to us? You know,
how did they get there? Who put them
how
there?
How did they even, exactly. You know, it's like, No. I need to do some studying. And fortunate enough, growing up, my mom was a reader. And I got that from her, right? She was a ferocious reader and she always shared articles with me, you know? And that's how I developed my passion for curiosity and just learning about things that really intrigued me. And just the natural world just happened to be one of them. You know, basic things like how does it rain? You know, why is there sunlight one day it's dark? I'm like, what's happening here? And I wasn't getting answers. And I was not comfortable with people telling me, look, it's always been like this. We've always believed it to be like this. I just thought, no, that's a cop-out. Really, there should be an answer to this. So that's how the passion for astronomy started, you know, and I've until today. My 25 year, I'm still amazed at what I learn about the universe in general.
Okay, so there's astronomy and there's astrology. So you can't tell me if I'm gonna get married in 2023. You're not that guy.
I can't, unfortunately.
Okay, so there's clearly a difference. Astronomy.
There's a massive difference. Yeah, I leave that to the people in astrology. I'm sure when Mars is in opposition to the Sun and they tell you, you know, you're gonna get a.
You're
that's
get why married, you're fighting.
Exactly. So it's like, hey, you know what? Let me stay away from that. Let me rather stick to what I know for a fact. Right. So
damn it. And there I was thinking I might just get a free consultation after this. Okay, cool. So so part of astronomy, maybe you'll correct me if I'm wrong. Obviously, you study the planets, you study what's happening outside the Earth, or would you also study the Earth? Like please explain it in simple term what astronomy is then.
In fact, I think you've hit it spot on. That's precisely what astronomy is. You know, we learn about these celestial objects in the sky, whether it's our closest stars, its planets, it's the galaxy, it's our solar system, or it's other solar systems. So it's an inclusive study that is obviously subdivided into other studies within it. You know, studies like astronomy, astrophysics, cosmology. So, but in general, we are trying to understand the origins of the universe. You know, what is our place in this vast and unending complexity of this universe that we find ourselves in?
Okay, cool. So, maybe let's mention three things that. Since you started this love affair with the universe, like what are the maybe three things that you can mention that you've learned that even today you're just like, yo, I didn't know this, and it literally like blew your mind.
Look, I think I'm gonna keep it local, right? By local, I mean I'm gonna keep it in our solar system, right? Okay. So the solar system is obviously the sun and all the other eight planets orbiting it. And this includes all the other asteroids, comets that are around, that are orbiting the sun. So that's the solar system. Okay. So I think I will start with, we can start with the moon. for instance. Yeah. You know, we see the moon every day, right?
Mm-hmm.
But what it actually means is as just and what we see continuously astonishes me. But one of the things is that, you know, you look at the moon, you know, so we only, for people, for earthlings, anyone on earth, mm-hmm. ever sees one side of the moon, right?
Okay.
What that means is anyone who has never had an opportunity to look at images or videos that NASA or the Chinese Space Agency or all the other space agencies have taken of the entire picture of the moon only mm-hmm. ever knows one side of it. And that is the reason for that. It's because we say that the moon is tidally locked to Earth. What that okay. means is it takes the same amount of time for the moon to orbit the Earth as it does to spin, right? So meaning at any given time, only one side of the moon is facing Earth. You will never see the other side of the moon, ever. So all those, I mean, if you have a smartphone that is able to zoom and look at the, you'll see these craters, right? These different colors where it was bombarded with asteroids and everything. You only see that side. You will never see the far side of the moon because of that tidal locking thing that I'm telling you about. So, because I always thought that, yeah, I always see 360 degree moon,
but that's not. It's not.
It's not the case. I mean, I thought that was fascinating. Another thing which I found fascinating was our sister planet, Venus.
Mm-hmm.
One of the most
not the tennis player.
No, not Venus Williams. No, Venus the planet. Okay.
Okay.
So now Venus, on Venus, and I'm just going to try and say this very slow. It takes a day on Venus is longer than a year.
So,
a day on Venus
mm-hmm.
is longer than a year.
What do you even mean?
So, for instance, on Earth, right?
Yeah.
The Earth orbits the sun 365 times a year, 366 if it's a leap year.
Yeah.
Right? It takes 24 hours to spin on its axis.
Yeah.
Right?
So that's a day.
So that's a day. Right? Going around the sun is a year. On Venus, it's the opposite effect of it. The spinning of the planet on its axis approximately takes 243 days. For the planet to orbit around the sun, it takes about 224 days. Yikes. So on Earth was when Earth orbits the sun, we like throwing parties, right? Yeah. So when it does the full revolution. So on Venus, we'd be throwing parties every day, you know. Every day, we'd be throwing parties.
We're happy.
So can you imagine being a year older than a day old? That's
confusing. Okay, you're already, right? Like, you are messing with my brain, because now I'm just trying to, like, digest this, so... Okay, yeah.
It's and look, there are many fascinating things about this planet, which is sometimes called Earth's twin. All the other planets are orbiting the sun anti-clockwise. Venus is the only planet that's going the other way around. So when everybody's going east, Venus is going west, you know. And the leading theory about that is that an Earth-sized asteroid hit the planet during the early formation of the solar system, right? Obviously throwing it off course. And because of what we call the law of inertia, or Newton's first law of motion. So what happens is that the law says when a body or an object is in its state of rest or motion and is acted on by an unbalanced force, it will remain either in that position forever unless another unbalanced force acts on it. So Venus was hit by this asteroid, which obviously threw it off course, and it stayed there because no other object or planet or asteroid ever
came to rescue it.
Exactly. So Venus is just going west, we are going east, you know, and it's always like that. And the last one that this one is for me almost emotional for me, right?
Okay, I need to hear this one.
Yeah, I always try and explain this to people. So what we are made of, the atoms, elements that make our body, right, can be traced to the crucibles of a star that once died in a supernova, right? Now, the core of the stars is heated up during something called a thermal nuclear fusion, right? When this star died in a supernova, it seeded all its contents.
Okay.
Hydrogen, helium, carbon, oxygen into the universe, which formed the basis for life of other stars. So our star, as you see it now, is a second generation star. It is born because a star elsewhere died in that process where it exploded, right? And seeded all these elements and forming these other stars, which we on Earth are a beneficiary of. Now, all these elements that are in the core of the star are very abundant in the universe, right? I mean, we have hydrogen everywhere. We have oxygen everywhere. We've got carbon everywhere. And all those things can be found in your body. I mean, our bodies are made of, 60-70% of water?
Yeah.
That's H2O. Hydrogen matches what we find in the universe. Oxygen matches what we find in the universe. The calcium in your bones, the iron in your blood, the carbon in your body matches what we find in the universe. So when you are sitting and you are looking at the night sky and thinking, you know, this humongous universe, I'm very insignificant compared to it, that is not correct. The universe is in you and you are part of the universe, literally speaking.
Okay. So, you know, my brain always goes to like song association, because now I'm just thinking of this song. You are the universe.
I know that song.
Oh my gosh.
It is so true. It is absolutely true. That is why I always tell people, right? I always tell people that sometimes when you're going through tough times, right? And you are in a situation where you need advice, right? And maybe you go out and you just look out in the night sky and you're seeking for help, right? You already know the answer because you are in effect asking answers from yourself. When you're looking up there, you're looking at the universe, which you are part of.
That
universe is part of you. So I always think about this and think, wow, you know, it's so humbling, right? It's so, and I always get emotional thinking about it, that, wow, it is. And when you understand these things, you appreciate the natural realm for what it really is, as opposed to what we hope it to be.
Yeah, because when you started on that stars thing, you lost me there, but you quickly brought me back because I was like, what do you mean? Stars exploded. What? And then where? But now, I that is deep. That needs also a bit of processing. Okay, so I appreciate that. Actually just made me think deeper now. And then now let's get back to, you know, like you said, we are in, you know, the planet Earth, you're right? You guys study other planets, and you just told us that Venus, I mean, one day is over a year. My mind is still blown. So does that make you appreciate planet Earth more, or like how do you then see planet Earth compared to the other planets?
It does. And if you think about it, right, we have never found signs of life anywhere in the universe. If you look at Earth, Earth is in what we call the Goldilocks zone.
Okay.
It is not too close to the sun where water evaporates and it's too hot. It is not too far from the sun where it becomes an ice, where again, life is almost near impossible. It is just at that right boom spot.
Yeah.
I mean, how lucky can you be, right? Being that planet, you know?
Yeah.
And what we see again is that Venus and Mars once had liquid water.
Mm.
But for reason which we are engaging on at the moment, that those disappeared, right? We can see on Mars, for instance, we can see water beds, we can see river beds, that there was water here. But what happened to the planet? You know, why does it look so barren at the moment?
Mm-hmm.
Right? And the question that always comes to us is, could that be the future of Earth?
Eek.
Possibly. Possibly, you know.
Yeah, that is scary.
Absolutely. So the study of these other planets really does give you appreciation of where you are, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because if you think about it, there are planets. I mean, I'll go back to Venus. Venus has sulfuric clouds, has acidic clouds. It rains sulfuric on the planet, right? It has an average temperature of 465 degrees. It's too hot for life to exist there.
Yeah.
Right? So, I mean, it's astonishing. And Earth just has that right. Earth has an atmosphere, something that most planets don't, which protects you and me. So I promise you, that's why I'm also just an advocate for climate change, you know, for us to heed the call for climate change, because it's the only world that we have at the moment. This is our only home. Obviously, going in future, we are going to Mars, but as things stand, this is our only home. This is the last stand. From here, if anything was to happen today, that's it.
Yeah, nice because experience. I was about to say that. So you said it. What I wanted to say that this is the only home we have, and we don't have like an option B. So if we don't take care of your like our current home, like Sizoyapi, like you're saying, I don't know what you said. You said we're going to Mars in future.
Yeah.
You mean physically or? Are we going to Earth going to replicate Mars? Like, is that what did you mean by that?
So we
and are what if I don't want to go?
so maybe I think just a step back, right? Of why one of the reasons we doing that, besides us being natural explorers as humans, I think of my family that would have originated from Lesotho, but I find myself in Gauteng.
Yeah.
Right. So we are natural explorers. We want to know. We want to know. But think about this. 66 million years ago, an asteroid comes, wipes out off the coast of Chicxulub in Mexico, lands and hits Earth and wipes out almost 70% of life that ever existed there. The dinosaurs, that is the story of the dinosaurs, right? Now, we want to have a plan B, right? Now, if a calamity like that was to happen, which, by the way, we know for sure it will happen again, we want to have an option
of
being able to move to another planet. And again, Mars is the next best thing. Not that it is ideal like Earth. Make no mistake. It's a very unforgiving planet. Average temperature, minus 60 degrees. It has a very thin atmosphere. So meaning without a spaced suit on Mars, you'll die in 2 minutes.
I know, guys.
So it is such a hostile planet. So what we're going to do, Elon Musk of Twitter fame is at the forefront of this, right? With his company, SpaceX.
Yeah.
He wants to, it's not just him. That's the idea in any case, generally. We want to terraform the planet. What effectively that means is we want to manipulate the atmosphere of that planet to mimic Earth so that we can live. But when we move onto that planet, we're going to use domes, obviously, so that at least we are able to live, under those domes whilst we are busy trying to work out how we're going to terraform the planet. So we are literally moving to Mars. I mean, I think you would have heard that there's a mission to the moon called Artemis 1, which is currently on, busy going around the moon. Then there's Artemis 2, which will happen, I think, in 2026, where we are sending the first person of color, the first woman, to start a permanent base on the moon. From there, we are moving to Mars. Right?
Yo, so I don't want to go.
To start a colony.
What if I just want to live here? I'm just going to stay here on this lovely
Look, earth. You can live. Nice. Nothing wrong with that. Like, nothing wrong with that. You can live here. Earth is a beautiful planet. It's an amazing place. Mm-hmm. In spite of all the issues that we might have, it's the greatest thing that would have ever happened to us. Exactly. Everything that lives on.
Because, life happens here. I mean, you know, like you have food growing from soil, from a seed, you know, the air, the water, and everything. And now you tell me that there's no water at Mars. Like, how are we going to survive? Like, what are we going to drink? You know, things like that.
I know. There's a lot of work that's going to happen on Mars. Yeah. I must be honest.
I'm so overwhelmed.
Because we're seeing these ice caps that we want to... So there isn't liquid water, but we can see these ice caps. Obviously, we're going to have to now manipulate whatever ice caps that we find and turn that into consumable water. So there's a lot of work, but we're doing it for our survival, right?
And I like how you're saying we, like, you know, you are part of this team that's going to Mars and just going to, like, prepare Mars for us.
So there was a it just happened that company, I think, went bankrupt, but there was a competition where people were sending in applications for this one-way trip to Mars, right? That we're going to start, right? And I actually applied. I just never made it, to be honest. So, and
you wanted to leave and go to Mars, one-way tickets?
I was taking one for the team, right? I was taking one for the team. I was willing to pay the ultimate price for the survival of humanity, you know? And of course, a lot of people would not understand.
I'm stunned. Like, my mouth is like jaw on the floor.
That's how passionate about us and our survival and finding our place in the universe as well. You know, I'm happy to take it for the team. Nothing wrong with it. You know, I mean, you know, there's people who've contributed so enormously, hundreds and hundreds of years ago. We're still talking about them today.
Yeah,
you know, it wouldn't have to be one of those people. I'm just saying, you know.
So you want to be one for the books now. You just want to be that guy, like Thabiso Modemoge, you know, history was made, you know, like awards after awards.
Just like a friend of mine would say, some leave a will, some leave a legacy, you know. So
you want to leave a legacy.
Absolutely.
Oh wow. Absolutely. I'm still stunned. Wow, Tavi. So you were actually willing to go to Mars. Wow. Yeah. Okay. All right, Tabiso, like I said, I'm still stunned about that Mars thing you just told us. But, you know, when it comes to how the planets have changed and how everything is happening around us now, we had scientists that predicted climate change years ago. So let's talk about what we are currently seeing happen now that was predicted years ago. Like, what can you talk about that, you know for a fact that we were warned about and it's currently happening?
Look, I think climate change is the biggest and the best example of what we have been warned about. And just on a side note, I was watching the news yesterday, and they were talking about the things that people Google in South Africa.
Yeah.
And climate change was actually the third thing
okay.
that encouraged me. Yeah, that encouraged me. That is the third most Googled thing in nice. South Africa.
Mm.
What is climate change? And then they also categorized it further, the what is question, you know?
Yeah.
And the one of the top five questions was, what is the relationship between climate change and droughts? So that encouraged me to show that people are indeed South Africans in general.
Yes.
That are actually thinking about these things, right? Look, we've been warned about greenhouse gases to reduce our carbon footprint, right? That's why I always say, when in doubt, follow the science, right?
Okay.
And we can clearly see it now. In fact, I was again on the news yesterday in Durban, right? You can see that the beaches are flooded, right, with E. coli and all other things.
Yeah.
Exactly. Because of those floods that we had, I think, in April.
Yeah.
And that was precipitated because of climate change.
Exactly.
We had unusual rains in Mozambique. Thousands and thousands of people died. I was listening to the minister of Pakistan, you know, for COP27, and he was saying that, you know, just this year alone, because of climate change, we've had seven times more the amount of rainfall that we'd have in a year.
Imagine.
So you can imagine what that does. It uproots people from their homes. One day this was a place with grounds and houses, the next thing is submerged underground, right?
Yeah.
And as I think we discussed earlier about climate change, I think it's important for the listeners of this podcast to understand that, you know, despite these calls that we're getting about climate change, if we don't heed them, no problem. Earth will still be here, right?
Just different.
Yeah, exactly. But it will be in such a condition that it makes it uninhabitable for us.
Yeah.
Right? And life will cease to exist. And if people still don't understand, let's go back to our sister planet, Venus, which experiences runaway greenhouse effect, right?
Okay, explain that.
Now, because the planet, right, we know greenhouse gases. Carbon dioxide is a greenhouse gas. Water vapor is a greenhouse gas. Venus has that in abundance, right, from the volcanic eruptions that it had to the heat that the planet experiences. Now, as a result of these greenhouse gases, obviously they thicken the atmosphere. So what that does is it raises
the temperature
on the planet, right? Now, we would like to think as gas being what? Weightless? If somebody speaks of oxygen, nobody thinks, hey, that thing is heavy, eh?
Because we don't associate. We don't even feel it. It's like, oh,
exactly. Okay. Exactly. But we now know, as it turns out on Venus, those gases are actually heavy. So heavy that the atmospheric pressure on Venus is 100 times more than what it is on Earth. So let me just break it down further for the listeners, right? So that's almost the equivalence of being 3 kilometers underwater. Now, if you think water is light, water is heavy. So it's almost as if, you know, those machines where they crash cars and they make cars scrap metal and make them into smaller nyana box size objects.
Yes.
They use these crushing machines. So in fact, that's what you'd experience when you get there. But that's not all.
So you feel like you're drowning and you're 3 kilometers underwater. Is that what you mean?
It's so you will be literally crushed. Your head will be crushed, you know, into smithers. But that's not all, Lerato. Because of the heat, the average temperature on the planet is what? Minus what? 465 degrees?
Okay.
Enough to melt lead. So if by an unfortunate event, you find yourself on Mars, you will experience the biblical hell.
Maybe that's what you mean. Like, if we go to Mars, you're saying we'll be like hell. Maybe isn't that the afterlife? Okay, no, let's not go there. I just opened another can of worms.
So that's what you will experience. So you'll instantly, in fact, you'll be pulverized. I don't think we'll ever find anything of you.
Yeah.
If you should take it. That's what we are experiencing. And can I just add another fact?
Yes.
Mercury is the planet that is closest to the sun.
Okay.
So you'd think that Mercury is the hottest thing on the solar system.
Mm.
Alas, it is not. Venus is, because of these runaway greenhouse gases that they're experiencing, right? It is the second planet from, but it is the hottest in the solar system. Just to give people an idea of what this could mean for us.
So now, so we know what, like, we've been warned in the past and we see these things happening. Like you mentioned, the biggest example that people, I think, woke up to climate change is probably the KZN floods, you know, came from nowhere, like caused havoc, you know, and people in Durban haven't recovered today. And now with people like you who are now studying the planets and what's happening or what's coming in the future, how do we then better prepare so that we don't find ourselves where now we need to like pack our bags, and because now we first train to Mars, you know? So like, how do we slow it down? Because like I told you, I don't want to go to Mars. So let's slow down this, this thing of, you know, temperatures are getting hotter. I mean, we see our summers are crazy, and we know that, we know what heat does. You know, you get droughts and obviously the glaciers, they melt, and then you have other people that will be displaced because now, like you said, there was once houses here, and then next thing is they're all underwater. How do we then slow it down? Like, what are your friends in the astronomy worlds telling us, or like, what can you warn us about?
Look, I think fortunate enough, we have not only the hindsight, but we are able to gather knowledge using satellites and checking where these greenhouse gases are happening. We know for sure that one of the biggest things that we can do is the reduction in the use of fossil fuels. Right.
Okay.
Now, I know, for instance, economically, for a country like South Africa, for instance, right, it's something that it will be devastating.
Yeah.
Right. It will something, I mean, if we're to instantly stop the use of coal, for instance, economically, it just wouldn't work. We've got the third highest unemployment in that index that Bloomberg tracks. So it will obviously exacerbate that problem, right? But that's why we talk of just transitions, right? So where we're not just abruptly doing things, but we are transitioning slowly. We are reskilling people, right? Into economies that are green, right? The very same people who would have been using fossil fuels for their living, right? So that's another thing we can do. I mean, there's a drive, for instance, in electric cars that instantly reduces emissions. I mean, Africa, skepsis about to, I mean, hardly contribute over 10% of these global emissions.
Yeah.
The minute amount, the two behemoths, China and the US,
USA,
are the biggest polluters. You've got India as well. You know what I mean? So when we have those nations heeding this call, which I'm seeing there's a bit of positivity coming in terms of them to heed those calls, but it's not happening fast enough. And the unfortunate part, it affects poorer countries, right? Which have absolutely and very little to do with that. So I think just changing that behavior, educating people, reskilling people, are some of the measures we can put in place to try, when people understand and are involved in the happenings of what what goes on around them. You are more likely to take them with when yeah. these things change. But when they're not fully explained to people in a language, in terms that they can understand, it's pie in the sky stuff for them. You know, somebody who doesn't know what they're going to eat in the next 5 minutes and you're coming up with climate change. You know,
yeah, just like, what the hell are you talking about?
Exactly. Yeah.
And that's exactly. why Green with Envy is here.
Absolutely. 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 I and it's amazing. I must say, I go through your website a lot. And I'm so positive at the stuff that you that you show on your website, the podcast that you have about nature itself. I think it's one of the tools we can use. Yay. And people like me, I can educate people and say, look, if you want even further information, you've got a Green with Envy website that you can go to that further explain. So, you know what I mean? These are small steps, right?
Small steps
in large numbers make a big step.
That's it. That's exactly it. So, yeah, you've hit the nail on the head, because my thing has always been, you know, if I can teach one person and that person teaches the next person, I mean, you know, like I always say, if you know better, you do better. So, and it feeds into this humongous challenge that we have. But if we don't know about it, then we can't act differently, you know, and we'll end up in Mars. And like you said, we don't
know. I like that, Lera. I really like what you're saying there. I'm of the same view. That is why I love engaging people. I love changing people's mind. I like people to change my mind. That is precisely why I do that, because my thinking is, if I can educate you about one thing, I mean, if people hold information and if people of powerful positions hold wrong information, chances are they are going to propagate that information to their followers, their families. And the next thing you know, we have an entire nation, right, propagating wrong information.
Yeah. Now, if you can go in the wrong direction.
Exactly. If you can engage that person and show them the right thing, look, give them the right information, the very same influence, they can use it positively.
Yeah.
To others.
I think it also goes back to, like earlier you said, you know, being inquisitive. And I'm always thinking about, you know, kids in primary school or even high school, like thinking about what they want to do in the future and just being inquisitive and, you know, asking questions. I mean, they ask questions, they want to know. And the youth of today are very interested about what companies are doing to protect the environment, for example. They would rather work for a company that's eco-conscious than just someone who's just polluting, for example, you know. So I think that goes, they're going the right direction. But yeah, it's also just teaching them the simple, in like you said, making science accessible and easy to understand, you know. I mean, I, for example, hated geography in school. Like, I couldn't wait to drop geography. But look at me today. I'm just like, wait. So if the tide is low, what does the moon have to do with it? You know?
And can I just...
I
know it was just a throwaway statement about the moon, but can I tell you something very interesting about that?
Please. Because let me tell you why I actually mentioned the moon thing. Okay. We went to... where did we go? Anniston. And then there's a cave close to the ocean, so the only time you can go inside that cave is when the tide is low. And then that lady was explaining, it's because the moon, da, da, da. I was like, oh, you're confusing me, what do you mean? And I was like, I wish I had focused more in geography to understand low tide, high tide, the moon this, the moon that. So yeah, that's why I was thinking about the moon and all of that.
About the moon, interesting thing about the moon. So speaking of low tides and high tides, so as you know, the moon orbits the earth, right?
Yeah.
But at a specific time, and that's another thing that I have a criticism of science. So we say the moon is at apogee or perigee. I don't know why we use such fancy terms, but what this means is... exactly. So, but what this means is the orbit of the moon around the earth is not a circle, a perfect circle. Mm-hmm. It's almost like an ellipse. Right. So at one point, it is closer to Earth. At another point, it's further from the Earth.
Yes. But that rings now, a bell.
Exactly. Mm-mm. So, but now there's something that is being said in the public, which is not false, but is not entirely true. Okay. So during a full moon, right, we say the tides are high, right?
Okay.
But here's the thing. The thing we're forgetting to tell the people is that during full moon, we say the moon is at opposition during that time, meaning every time when there's a full moon, the sun, moon, and the earth are aligned in a straight line. Okay. What that means is that the force that the moon exerts on earth obviously makes the tides to be high, but the added force from the sun adds that force to making a high tide. So at any given time, the tides are the same, no matter the phase of the moon. Only when the moon is at opposition, or only when the moon, the sun, and the earth are aligned, with the earth, with the moon, and the sun adding that extra force on earth, do we have high tides. So had it not been for the sun, we'd be seeing these tides, maybe not so high, but because of the sun, we're getting to see these high tides. But because the moon looks very close and it's huge, we think, during full moons, there's a high tide, but we forget to add that force from that behemoth called the sun.
I'm still confused. So I let you know. Because I'm just like, okay.
I'm not communicating effectively.
If I'm standing, I'm trying to improve. I'll use that place. We were in the Western Cape and we walked to a certain point to take photos. So when we walked, it's like a little at West Coast National Park. There's a little beach there. So we walked to the place to take photos. And I mean, the water was maybe like knee length, you know. By the time we came back, and the guy was like, guys, okay, we need to go because, you know, tide, whatever, whatever. And then by the time we walked back, the water was almost at our waist. And I was just like, okay, that was all in an hour. What just happened, you know? So it's things like that I'm just like, okay, but I don't understand. If we were here in the morning, we'd literally be walking on the beach sand. But later, like around 5 p.m., the water is almost up our waist, you know? Those are the things that intrigue me. And then now you must include the moon and the force and the sun. you must come back for another episode to just also break that down. But you explained it, but I know I would still need to go and like research and understand it and, you know, digest it.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. All right.
But yeah, man, Tabi, so I don't know if you're this, like my brain is just like, what is happening? But all I know is that I'm not going to Mars. Okay. I'll do my best, take care of the environment so that we don't all end up in Mars.
Yeah. Look, I think that's a first start. Let's start there. I think that should be the first thing that is encouraged. You know, start with what is happening at home first. Exactly. Let's get that right. Okay. Going to Mars obviously is a long-term goal, but we cannot
like be rushing. How many years are we talking? Like,
look, Elon in fact wanted to. No. In fact, SpaceX wanted to go as soon as 2026.
Hey, bro, you know, that's like tomorrow.
So I'm not sure how far are they with the project, because obviously it requires a lot of things, you know, preparation, the right type of spaceship, rocket, that type of thing. So that's where they want. So I think realistically, 2030, I think that's what I think is a more realistic timeline where we are going to put the first people on Mars.
Okay, yeah. So my previous guest, Bianca, told me about eco-anxiety. I think you're just giving me eco-anxiety and stress. 2030, wait. that's tomorrow, guys. Like, you know how this past 3 years just went by like that. 2030 literally just tomorrow.
It will just be tomorrow. Yeah. The sooner we do that for me, the better. You know, become interplanetary beings. Wow. So
yeah. Look at you excited. Why are you so excited? I don't understand. But yeah, maybe it's because you know you have more knowledge, and yeah, and I'm so glad I had you today, because I think our listeners will also just, you know, sit and listen and then digest and just realize that there is so much happening around us. Hey, there is so much happening around us. The sun rises every day, sets every day, and we think, this has happened. This is just nature. It happens. One day, we don't know, the sun might just decide, not today, guys. Andizi,
Katebe. Yeah. You know? And look, I don't know if you want me to add a 2 cents about the sun. I'm happy to do it for the listeners if they want.
I love the sun, so let's hear it. Just please don't scare me again.
I love the sun too, right? Mm. I love the sun too. We obviously have different types of suns in the universe in terms of size, in terms of luminosity, so how bright they shine. No. In fact, wow. our sun, we'd like to think of it as very hot, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it is not the hottest star in the universe.
Okay.
And by the way, hottest stars are blue in color, right? Okay. And not white as our sun. But I digress. So I wanted to say that, look, the sun goes through a life cycle like humans, like anything that lives and dies.
Mm.
Our sun is a mid-sized star, right? And and what this means is that a mid-sized star obviously lives longer than a massive star. In the case of our sun, the lifespan of our sun is approximately 10 billion years. Now, with our current calculation, the sun has just done half of that. And it has about 5 to another 6 billion years to go before it dies. I don't like to personalize it, before it transforms into another form. Okay. But what that means is that because the core of the sun has this process called thermal nuclear fusion, where hydrogen atoms are so heated up that they convert hydrogen into helium. This luminosity of the sun that you see is mainly because of that process. But obviously, like anything else, you drive a car, after some time, it runs out of petrol, it runs out of gas. Mm-hmm. The same thing will happen to the sun. This nuclear process will not be forever. But as it does that, right, it will now start to eject, right, all these layers that it has. It will become what is called a red giant. It literally becomes big, huge, right? When it does that, it starts to consume planets that are obviously closer to it. Wow. Mercury will be the first to go. Venus will be the first to go. We think Earth, if it's not consumed by the sun, but it will be so close to the sun that life will cease to exist. Now, that means planets that are further away from it start becoming Goldilocks, start becoming in the Goldilocks zone, right? Like Mars, for instance.
To a different, so exactly. We're not too close to the sun.
So that's precisely one of the reasons. Obviously, it's going to happen in billions and billions of years, but it doesn't help.
We won't be here.
We won't be here. It doesn't have to play.
It doesn't mean we shouldn't care, though.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Of course, exactly. So that's one of the reasons, you know, either for survival. We do things for surviving. We evolve for survival, right? Mm. Otherwise, if we don't evolve with the conditions that are changing around us, we become extinct. We don't adapt or die. It is that simple.
Yes.
Anything in life, if you do not adapt, you become obsolete. You die.
That's it.
Yeah. So that's the story of the sun.
Okay, I think we need to obsolete this episode.
Okay, all right.
Because there is there's so much to talk about. I will definitely invite you back again when I have gathered more knowledge, you know.
Okay.
But yeah, we'll keep talking offline, you know, just to learn more and just finding where we sink. And yeah, have another conversation maybe next time, or maybe listeners should just tell us what they want to hear from you, and you know, any questions they might have. You know, you never know, but you'll definitely come back sometime soon. And yeah, and think about that podcast of yours as well. You know,
yeah. If I do it,
planting
guess who's the best? Who's the first? Who is the first? Person that I'm going to interview.
Elon
Musk. I will not name names. You.
Yes, I wanted to say it's me.
Of course it's going to be you.
But I thought, you know, since you like in the same WhatsApp group with Elon Musk, you just like call a Pretoria boy up and say, yo, man, listen, come speak on my podcast. It might happen.
You know, like we said,
don't squash it. It might happen, you know.
Look, like we said, we need to start with the basics first. Right. And let's start with what is happening at home, the environment. Yeah. So we start covering those bases first.
Exactly.
You educate and re-educate our listeners about the environment. Then we take it from there.
Oh, awesome, man. Tabi, so I think let's end it here. Thank you so much for your time and your knowledge. And yeah, I can tell that you're very passionate about this. And yeah, I mean, the fact that you still wanted to go to Mars, you actually applied. That's what's sticking with me. I'm just like, I wouldn't have met you like 2 months ago. Like, you know, wouldn't be having this episode. Have the people gone to Mars already? Did they go or not?
No. So unfortunately that eventually didn't happen because the company that was going for this ended up having financial difficulties and stuff.
No, it's because you were not on the list. That's why they didn't go.
Maybe. That was a sign.
That's the actual reason. But Tabisa, thank you. Thank you for joining me. And, you know, to the listeners, if you enjoyed this episode, please remember to share it with your friends and family. And remember to also check out my website, www.greenwithenvy.co.za. Tabiso, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you so much, Lerato, for the invite. I highly, highly appreciate getting this platform to communicate to you and your listeners. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Bye.
Bye.